A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Coming up on DTNS, a Swiss court rules that a like or even a share can be defamation, an Indian politician deepfakes himself, and can you really replace your laptop with a tablet? This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, February 21st, 2020. In Los Angeles, I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
Drawing the top tech stories from lovely Cleveland, Ohio, I'm Lynn Peralta.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
We also have with us today host and producer of the In Touch with iOS podcast, Dave Ginsberg. Dave, welcome. Good to have you on the show, man.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me. And I'm from Chicago.
Excellent. Another Illinois person.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
We're going
to
talk with Dave in a little bit about that idea of replacing your laptop or even maybe your PC with a tablet. We were just talking about possibly sponsoring a pig at a state fair and all kinds of other stuff on Good Day Internet. Become a member at patreon.com/DTNS. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Samsung named former finance minister Bok Jae-won as its board chairman, the first time the position has been filled by a non-executive director. Bok served as outside director at Samsung since March of 2016 and replaces outgoing Lee Sang-hoon, who was jailed in December for interfering with union activities.
Sony and Facebook both announced they will not attend the Game Developers Conference next month in San Francisco, citing concerns over the coronavirus. Facebook still plans to make the announcements it had planned for GDC through videos, online question and answers, and more. Which is odd because Facebook's just a ride down the 101 from San Francisco, so it wouldn't have been far, but they just don't want to gather.
After being banned in Colombia on February 1st, Uber is legally operating again in the country. After a court sided with a taxi company that sued Uber and ruled that Uber had violated competition rules, the company changed its model to allow riders to rent a vehicle along with a driver and will technically act as a point of contact between the two parties in Colombia.
Let's not mince words. Libra has looked like it's falling apart as a possible cryptocurrency, but it broke the string of bad luck. Shopify announced it will join the Libra Association and invest at least $10 million in Libra's reserve, operate a node on its network, all the things you have to do to become a member of the Libra Association. That puts them in a different position than Vodafone, Visa, MasterCard, Stripe, PayPal, Mercado Pago, Bookings Holdings, and eBay, all of whom have withdrawn from the Libra Association in the last 6 months or so. Libra Association now stands at 21 members, if you're counting. Let's talk a little more about Facebook wanting to give you some money.
Yeah, not a lot of money, turns out. To improve voice recognition, Facebook announced a new program in its Viewpoints market research app called Pronunciations that will pay users to make voice recordings. Users will record the phrase, "Hey, portal," followed by a first name from their friends list. Recording a list of 10 friends with each phrase spoken twice will earn the user 200 points in the Viewpoints app, which could be cashed out when you get to 1,000 points for $5. And that's through PayPal, $5. Yep. Recordings will not be associated with a Facebook profile, so says the company, and won't be shared without permission. Pronunciations is available to U.S. users older than 18 with more than 75 Facebook friends. It's funny. I floated this almost in jest by a couple of my friends who are not huge fans of Facebook, and they were like, "Great, you get $5, and Facebook will be deep faking you for the rest of your life." And I was like, "Okay, well, that's a little silly, but this does seem like okay. It is good to kind of pull the crowd and see how speech recognition could be better, and what better than your own community. But at the same time, it's a little insulting, the money situation, considering what you have to do, because whether or not it's anonymized, it is a personal experiment.
I don't know if it's insulting. Facebook already knows all this stuff about you already. Like, the risk is almost zero here. It's not a lot of money, but I guess it's better than them just stealing it. Dave, what do you think?
Yeah, I just can't see them stealing it that easily. I mean, the funny thing is the $5. I mean, just to record the voice, but I think it's going to be good because, you know, people have trouble pronunciations. It's just you still worry about the privacy part of it.
I mean, the principle here is right. You need this kind of data to train the stuff to be better. And people have said you shouldn't be taking my voice recordings. You should be paying. And so when Facebook pays, people still find things to criticize about it.
Yeah. They're always going to criticize something about Facebook.
I mean, saying, hey, portal followed by a first name from a friends list is not very revealing, you know, yeah. And you only have to do it 10 times. That's actually a pretty good hourly wage, relatively speaking. That's not going to take
a while. I think maybe the first name from the friends list is the only thing I kind of was like, if you're just trying to figure out speech recognition, why would it have to be someone's first name?
Because you need to vary it up, and you don't want to use last name because that is more identifying.
Well, not a last name, but it could be lots of different words, right?
Right, but first name is easy because, like, just look at your friend list and pick these words.
I suppose.
That helps cover a bunch of different phonemes.
Yeah.
New Mexico Attorney General Hector Balderas filed a lawsuit alleging Chromebooks provided to schools in the New Mexico area for free to schools, as I said, collect personal information from children younger than 13 years old without parental consent. The complaint claims that Google collected geolocation information, website visits, internet history, search engine records, student contact lists, voice recordings, and used student emails for advertising purposes in violation of the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act and potentially a violation of New Mexico's Unfair Practices Act. Google denies the claims, saying they are factually wrong, and told CNET, quote, G Suite for Education allows schools to control account access and requires that schools obtain parental consent when necessary. My guess is some of this is innocent. Some of this is Google's a cloud service. So you share your information with the cloud, which means with Google, in order to allow the cloud service to work. Teachers need to be able to access student information to make this all work. So some of this might just be overreacting. They are also claiming that advertising was sold. And advertising, Google says, is not sold on these G Suite accounts for education. So either New Mexico's wrong or Google was doing that, which is absolutely a violation of not only the law, but what they've said they do.
Yeah, it sounds like if Google was actually doing that and knew about it, they would have said, you're right, oversight. We have now reversed this action. The company saying we don't do this, this is wrong, does lead me to believe that maybe someone in New Mexico is not understanding what's going on.
But again, it wasn't just accusing them, in which the case you're right. They could say, oops, sorry, oversight. They filed a lawsuit. So that takes away the option to say, oops, sorry, oversight, because that can undermine your case.
Right.
But it seems like this would be something that someone would have noticed earlier. I don't know. I'm curious what the facts are behind this. Dave, does this bug you?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, Chromebooks in general, you kind of question what they are going to do because they have, it's wide open. And even when these kids put the information in there, there's no telling what Google's going to do to share with it. So it does bug me a little bit on that.
Well, this might bug you, might not. The Federal Supreme Court of Switzerland upheld a lower court ruling that likes and shares of content on Facebook can be considered illegal defamation. In the case, the defendant had liked and shared posts of fellow animal rights activist Erwin Kessler, defaming him as anti-Semitic and a neo-Nazi. The court cited the potential for such content to spread rapidly on social media could make likes and share defamatory in nature, and Swiss law only requires that an act be communicated to a third party to meet the threshold of defamation. The decision said a major factor in a defamation case would be how visible a shared post was outside of an immediate friend network of the defamed individual.
Yeah, so this is, it's important to note what Sarah said about in Swiss law, you only need to communicate the act, you only need to communicate to a third party to meet defamation if it's defamatory. Obviously, it has to be defamatory. Right. But once it's determined to be defamatory, in the United States, we have different laws. A lot of times you have to show things like actual malice, or you have to show knowledge that you knew it wasn't true. There's different standards. So we're talking about Swiss law. And what the court's saying, I think, is less controversial than the headline, which is they're saying the act of liking and sharing isn't the thing that gets you in trouble. It's when you spread it widely, when you are actually making this, you know, go viral. If you're just sharing it with a few friends and family, and maybe you don't know, then I don't think the court is saying that's what happens. But once you've spread it widely, then you are now communicating it. In there, if I'm reading this right, you are now intentionally communicating it. And under Swiss law, that's all that you need to prove. You don't need to prove the person knew it was bad, knew it was wrong, or whatever. If it's defamatory and you're spreading it, then you're communicating it to third parties.
It's interesting that, again, we're talking about Swiss law here, but that, you know, the law is basically saying, if you weren't paying enough attention, I don't know, you liked something because it was from a friend, and you know, it wasn't that you thought someone was a neo-Nazi or anything like that. Swiss law is like, well, don't share things like that. Then you're going to get in trouble too. It's not a matter of sort of blindly liking and sharing and passing along information, which is how lots of things on the internet work right now. And people can say, I don't know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. Or I don't believe with the original poster was saying. Swiss law is like, you need to, or you should not engage.
At least if you are likely to share this outside of your immediate network.
Right.
So if you keep things private, or you just don't have a lot of people following you, the average Swiss citizen might not have to worry about falling afoul of this accidentally. But with great power comes great responsibility. And so if you are someone that has the potential to make something go viral, then the Swiss court here is saying, then you need to consider that before you start spreading something. I mean, Dave, I feel like this is somewhat reasonable to say you are also responsible for the content you spread if you can spread it far and wide.
Yeah, I felt that right. Exactly. I mean, I'm not a Swiss citizen, so obviously I don't have to follow this law, but I mean, there's none of these types of topics I would never like or follow in my lifetime. It's just not stuff I'm into. And I know there's people out there who like to have that stuff, but I'm glad I don't live in Switzerland.
it's a lovely country. It really is.
It's lovely. Yeah. I mean, I don't mind visiting.
I don't know that if I lived in Switzerland, I'd worry about this too much. And I am somebody who has the ability, certainly on Twitter, to spread something far and wide. But I also know that even in the United States, I could be subject to defamatory, you know, considerations, given that I do a podcast that is widely operated. So I'm comfortable with that. And I think we need more of these kinds of decisions that say, look, you can't always blame the platform. There are things the platform should be doing well and be doing better, and there are things that individuals should take responsibility for. I think that's an important point. Earlier this week, Vice reported that India's BJP party, that's the party of Narendra Modi, the leader of the government right now, partnered with political communication firm The Ideas with a Z Factory to create a translated version of a plea from the BJP party president, Manoj Tiwari, asking for people in Delhi to vote for his party. The original video was recorded by Tiwari sitting in a chair. The Ideas Factory then trained a lip sync algorithm on speeches by Tiwari to learn his mouth shape. That's what deepfakes do. And a dubbing artist came in and recorded his speech in the Haryanvi language, something that Tiwari doesn't speak. That recording of the dub actor was put into the original Tiwari video, and the algorithm then modified Tiwari's mouth to match the words of the person speaking Haryanvi. So it wasn't faking Tiwari's voice, but it was faking his appearance to make it appear as if he were speaking in the Haryanvi language. The modified video was then posted across 5,800 WhatsApp groups to reach people in the Haryanvi-speaking migrant worker population in Delhi and attempt to persuade them to vote for his party in the upcoming election. Now, this sets off a lot of people because it's using a deepfake in an election. But it's not the usual thing you assume, which is someone using it to attack someone and make them look bad. It's using them to make the leader of the party look like they speak the language of a group they want to vote for their party, even though he doesn't. So it is faking it. It's faking it for accessibility so that people can understand the message. But it's also implying that, hey, look, he speaks our language when in fact he doesn't.
Yeah, I think that I was thinking to myself, okay, there are a lot more languages spoken in India than the US where we live. But if this were a politician in the US that didn't speak Spanish, let's say, and there was a really good deepfake and it was attempting to persuade a lot of Spanish speaking voters to vote for this politician, you know, the area gets a little gray, right? Yeah, there is an accessibility factor to this. And a person who doesn't speak English, let's say, if that was the first language that the politician spoke, if they're now receiving a message that they're really on board with, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But it also is, it's you're not lying, but it's almost as if, hey, I'm one of you, but you're not, and you didn't have to learn a language, and you don't necessarily have a lot in common with the people that you're trying to get to vote for you. So I'd be interested to see, you know, if anybody takes a lot of issue with this, because it's clever, but it's messy.
If it weren't political, I don't think people would have much problem with it, right? If it's if it's a CDC, you know, the equivalent of a disease control agency putting stuff out there, and they're like, look, we didn't have time to film 15 different people. We wanted it to all come from the mouth of the leader of our agency. Yeah. People might have less problem with it. Dave, what do you think?
Yeah, you hit the right nail on the head there. This political. I mean, just anything that's political, everybody makes a big, huge deal out of it. If it was nothing else, then we wouldn't be talking about this right now. So, that's really why I see things. It's just right. That's political.
I would add the one difference is that there are alternative methods for accessibility besides doing a deepfake to get your message across. You could use captioning. You could use an overdub of someone else's voice. If the whole point is to convince people that this person is authentically a native Harvani speaker, I think it's a little kind of it's kind of like, well, yeah, disingenuous.
But also is the whole point to convince people that he is a native Haryanvi speaker? I imagine they would say, no, that's not the whole point. The point is to have the words of our party leader delivered in their language.
Right.
And yes, you could have someone else read them, but then they're not coming from the party leader. And yes, you could put captions, but that's not quite as accessible if someone can't read as having it spoken.
Or you could have it spoken with someone else's voice over his voice. I mean, they do it all the time with translations.
Right. And so if you're going to do that, why not make the mouth match and just make it smoother?
Does it matter at that point when really it's the message and not the connection of the lips and the words?
And the point is that the message is not at issue here. We're not talking about there being any lies in the message. This is just a, hey, please vote for us message.
Right.
So I could see where the line gets real fuzzy there of like, well, wait, if I could just have somebody else speak it, why can't I have somebody else speak it and match it up to the video of the politician? Like, what's so wrong with that? We're not saying he speaks Haryanvi. We're not trying, you know, it's interesting. There's a lot.
Kind of goes back to Swiss law. If you're not paying enough attention, you might think he is.
Right. And that's a fair point. It could imply a lot of things.
Google announced that starting on August 3rd, new Google Play apps that request background location will need to pass a review. Existing apps will need to pass the review starting November 3rd, and the policy will apply to Google's own apps as well. Google says the review will look at if the app's core functionality justifies the background location data gathering, and developers can request feedback from Google starting in May about the background location review.
This is the opposite of our other stories today, in that I don't think anyone could disagree that this is a good thing.
Right.
So, yeah. Wow. Amazing.
Yeah. It's like, do you want background location? Well, why?
Yeah.
And then the developer's like, well, here's my really good reason. Google's like, okay.
So we're not only asking people in the app if they want it to be on, we're asking the app developer to justify why they even want to ask for it to be on, and we're applying it to our own apps. Not a lot of room for criticism outside of worrying like, oh, well, maybe Google won't really be hard on their own apps or something like that. But, you know, who knows, right? At that point, you just don't trust Google to begin with. So I think this is doing all the right things. Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. One response to the growing trend against accepting cash is to pass laws requiring you to accept cash. That's happening in a few cities in the United States. We've talked about it before on the show. As cashless becomes more popular, they're saying, look, we're not going to let retailers not accept cash, because that cuts some people out of society who don't have access to cashless forms of payment. However, in Sweden, where the society is already mostly cashless, like 90%+ cashless, the Riksbank Central Bank announced it is launching a year-long pilot of a digital currency called the e-krona. The Riksbank says it wants to make a digital payment system that is accessible to everyone. So they're coming at it from the other end, saying, well, if we're going to have cashless, let's make sure that everybody can access it somehow. Now, this test is just a test. Riksbank economist Gabriel Soderberg told Technology Review, quote, there is currently no decision on issuing an e-krona, how an e-krona might be designed, or what technology might be used. This is the beginning, right? This is how they figure out all that stuff, is like, let's run a pilot, let's try some things, let's collect feedback. But I thought it was interesting as a different approach to solving the accessibility problem versus just requiring the existing system to stay, to say, well, let's see if we can actually make the new system work for everybody.
Yeah, and if it does work, if the e-krona can work in Sweden, and it is sort of a tested model, this can apply to lots of other economies where the cashless society is a real issue for people who need to deal in cash.
And it also keeps, you know, private payments from taking over the entire cashless system. If the government is issuing its own digital money, then there is, you know, the trust of the central bank here in this case.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Behind that, rather than having a Libra association or something like that move in and take over what would otherwise be the normal central bank's province. So there's that aspect of it as well. Dave, you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, that's welcome to see this. I mean, I'm hoping this continues across the world. Cashless payments is just here to stay. You know, I use Apple Pay all the time, and it's cashless. So, you know, it's definitely something I'm looking forward to.
As long as you could make it where everybody can use it, and that's exactly. No easy thing. That's a tall order. Yeah. But this is how you investigate if that's possible, by doing these kinds of tests. Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to DailyTechHeadlines.com.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
We talked earlier this week about Microsoft Office bringing together all of their apps into a bundled app for iOS and Android. And there's a minimal version of it for Android tablet. There's one coming for iOS. We're seeing more and more tools pitched toward not only mobile, but tablet. And Dave, you do use a tablet as your daily driver. Am I right?
I can't admit that, but I mix with it. I try to use it all the time. I've been on my way for years to the presentation about it. I mean, I've always been an advocate of wanting to use it. When we say tablet, I think we're talking about an iPad because that's why I wrote this in here. I said, how do you identify between a tablet and a tablet that's a laptop? Because, you know, I work with people that have, tablet laptops and
a lot of convertibles out there. Yeah.
And then the pull away keyboards, it's a full out tablet, just like an iPad. So that's why I said, are we using that instead of using an iPad as opposed to a laptop tablet.
So let's take the iPad as our example tablet for this case. If somebody says, look, I just want to use the iPad. Well, they're going to have to get a keyboard, right?
Have to get a keyboard. Have to get. Well, they can get a mouse now. They've made that accessible. And there's a touchpad availability for it as well. So, you do need to get that if you want to be the most productive. Typing on the screen keyboard can be cumbersome, hard to maneuver after time. So you're definitely going to want a keyboard. But there's so many of them out there that even if we saw Bridge at CES, they're coming out with their new one, the Pro Plus, with the entire case and everything, and plus a touchpad built into it. So that's really where I thought we're really going to kicking in the high gear with the start to making an iPad, a full-time daily driver.
I think a lot of people assume, well, if all you need to do is email and web surfing, then sure, I can use a tablet. What about power users? What about enterprise users?
Well, yeah, those power users, we get, there's a ton of great software out there. Podcasters are using iPads as their daily driver for doing their podcasts, video editing and photo editing, huge, huge things, and as well as productivity. You talked about Microsoft Office earlier this week. I've talked about it on my podcast just yesterday. So Microsoft Office is a really big driver of iOS. I really like seeing it. And having as a standalone app with all, having the standalone apps, but now you have the all-in-one app, which is going to be great. And the cool thing too is it does work in enterprise. I did test it. So, when we drive over to enterprise a little bit, you talk about systems that are designed more for mobility in mind, they have to access systems. And that's where the challenge is in enterprise systems, meaning there are specific applications that are not outside the world of the internet.
I think the one thing that trips me up in the idea of relying on the tablet, two things. One is just the processing power. Sometimes I just need a bigger one, and I don't think there's any way around it. That's just maybe over time going to go away, but that's the same as choosing between an ultralight and a more powerful laptop. So it's almost a false comparison. But the other thing is the ability to do quick window switching. And I know that's getting better all the time, but even still, even with mouse support in iPad OS, doesn't feel as fast and fluid as the time-honored window interface that you get on a good old-fashioned laptop.
No, I agree with you on that. The mouse right now is, I don't know if I can just say it's usable at this point. I mean, you got to go deep into accessibility just to get to it, to set it up. So, but the nice thing is, like I said, with these Bridge keyboard touchpads, I think it's going to be more fluid. I'm really interested. They haven't been really set out into the market yet, but be interesting to see how that touchpad will interface with it. And you know, hardware in itself, there's just so many choices of adding to the iPad. But as far as going back to your point about the processing, I think the processing actually has gotten a lot faster, and I find it almost equivalent to some laptops that I've tested. As far as that goes.
Yeah, where is the line? Because I know you can definitely do video editing, but 100%. You can't really do 3D rendering. You can't do some of the higher end stuff. You can't process. No. There's a limit to what you can process. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those are going to be the extreme pro users. And yeah, there's no way an iPad's going to do that for them. You know, good at video editing, even just using iMovie or any type of video editing that's out there, is going to be good. So I'll touch a little bit more on enterprise. Why iPads would be ideal is you might get into situations where high risk locations have to be traveled to, like China, Russia. Then you know the iPads are the way to go because they, you know, those two governments want to decrypt your device and you can't keep it with a password. So iPads, they don't have choice.
Yeah, and honestly, that's another advantage to the Chromebook is because you have to log in with your account. You can have separate accounts. You can log in with a not a dummy account per se, but sort of a travel account, if you will. And that's a nice thing about the iPad OS as well, and even Android. Android tablets can do the same thing. So that's a very good point. Well, thank you, Dave, for walking us through that. I'm curious what people out there think, especially if you are someone who uses a tablet more often. Send us an email, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com.
Also, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on other stories at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. You can also join in the conversation in our Discord. It's the best community around, which you can join by linking to a Patreon account at patreon.com/DTNS.
Let's check out the mailbag.
Well, Dwayne wanted to weigh in on our discussion yesterday about Apple's App Store policies and what is working and what needs to change. Dwayne says Apple's policy is an attempt to strengthen and maintain the iOS economy. If large developers were able to place their free apps in the App Store and permitted to be processed externally, then the large developers would be able to take advantage of the entire ecosystem without contributing anything to the iOS economy. Large developers would get, for free, App Store editorials, the developer tools, WWDC entry, all of the overhead of making and growing the platform. More egregiously, it would mean that small developers would be subsidizing the ecosystem for everyone. Apple's solution may not be the best, but I do think that putting up a roadblock for developers to prevent the willful bypass of contributing to the App Store ecosystem while providing the opportunity for small developers to put up free apps for distribution without cost puts Apple's policy in a more egalitarian term as opposed to a pure money grab.
Dwayne and I had a great email conversation about this because my response to him was, yes, and all of the big companies still take advantage of all of those attributes that you mentioned without paying. Amazon Prime Video, Audible, Comixology, they're all in there without paying. Fandango, in there without paying. Netflix now, in there without paying. So they're doing all the things that he says. And he had some good points about the fact that, yes, but it does hold the line and it sets the precedent and it makes some space for those small developers. But it was an interesting point to say, like, look, there is a reason to hold that line. I think where Dwayne and I ended up in our email conversation was, wouldn't it be nice if there was some compromise, if there was a way to say, look, we need you to contribute to the upkeep of the App Store, but also in a way that didn't hurt us as users and make us, like, you know, just don't make it illegal to link to something is kind of where I sit on this anyway. Dave, I'm curious where you sit on this idea of not allowing anyone to even link out to another way to pay for something.
Yeah, Apple gets really weird with the payment stuff. I think it's going to be interesting to see where this goes. Again, like you said, putting what people want as far as their apps and what they do, they give Apple taking control of it is definitely a big thing. But yeah, this is going to be interesting. This is definitely going to be interesting to see where this goes.
Shout out to patrons at our master and grandmaster levels, including DeGracia A. Daniels, Ken Hayes, and Brad Schick.
Len Peralta has been with us as he is most Fridays, drawing during the show. What have you been inspired by this week?
You know, in a couple weeks, I'm going to be putting this tablet versus laptop to the test.
Oh, yeah.
As I go out to Seattle to draw live in front of an audience. And I have to agree with most of what you're saying, you know, the computing power, things like that. But really what it comes down to is just creativity. What do you want? What do you feel comfortable with? And that's what this is sort of. It's sort of like, can't we all just get along here? Tablet versus laptop. Why do we have to put them, you know, against each other?
And I don't want to carry fight? Both, Len. That's
what I know. But but look at these guys.
Look at their little tablet and computer faces.
We can coexist.
Yes, they can all just get along. And that's what this is all about. It's called Tablet versus Laptop. It's available right now at my Patreon if you're a Patreon subscriber. And it's also at my online store at LenPeraltaStore.com. And also, I want to mention, I will be at ConveyUX in Seattle in a couple weeks putting this to the test. And we will see how I do. So stay tuned.
Sounds good, Len. Thank you so much. Also, thanks to Dave Ginsburg for being on our show today. Happy Friday to you, Dave. It was so nice to have you. Let folks know what you're up to and how they can keep up with your work.
Yeah, happy Friday to you as well. Thanks for having me. You can find me on my website, intouchwithios.com. That's my podcast. Been doing that for almost 3 years now. Having a lot of fun doing that, talking about iOS. And then if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I have Twitter handles DaveG65.
Folks, you can get a whole lot more out of Daily Tech News Show for just $2 a month. If you are listening to this on the public feed and you've heard some ads, you can get an RSS feed out of Patreon that doesn't have the ads. It includes extra shows like our bonus show where we look back at old lineups or live with it, where Sarah and Roger talk about spending a lot of time with gear and giving in-depth reviews of that time that they've spent. And the only way to get that stuff is to become a patron. So stop down right now. And if you've got $2 that you can afford to spend this month, we'd love to have it. Patreon.com/DTNS.
We'd also love your emails. You have some feedback for us. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern. That's 21:30 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back on Monday. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.